What's up, everybody? Welcome to Truth with Tara. I'm Tara Simon, and today I have got Mama Jan in the house. What's up, Mama Jan?
I'm doing good. How you doing, Tara?
I'm doing so well. Thanks so much for being on with me today. It's such a pleasure to have you.
Thanks very much. Thanks for asking.
Yeah. You know, I was telling you before we started that, you know, I really believe in building community within the music industry. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I feel like it got a little lonely at my picnic table, frankly, working so much and not having any friends and colleagues, really, you know, people that you can commiserate with, look up to, respect. And you know, you're somebody that's been in the industry for so long and you've had so much success in it. You've helped shape so many artists' careers, and that's to be noted, right? And so I appreciate your time today and for coming on. And I wanted to just touch first, before anything, on your relationship with your mom. Because I see on Instagram Miss Betty, and I have to say, like, one of the reasons I wanted to have you on was because you're a woman, a successful woman, in an industry that is extremely male dominated and also really difficult to find a niche in. And I have a sneaking suspicion that a lot of your success you attribute to your mom. Is that true?
So my mother is an extraordinary woman, not really a businesswoman the way that you and I would talk about music business and what we do.
Yeah.
But she calls herself a domestic engineer.
Wow, I love that.
My mother was always a working woman, and really where her gifts were in the provision for us kids at home and really giving us the background and that foundation that you need to be able to believe in yourself and to be entrepreneurial in spirit, to have good spiritual grounding, and then also really caring about other people. So I attribute a lot to my mom and dad, and have learned a lot from taking care of her in her latter years. She just turned 94.
Oh my God. And she's beautiful.
She is beautiful on the inside and on the outside. And I'm real proud of her just for being determined.
Yeah.
Every day my mother wakes up and says, if you know, if she has a pulse, she has a purpose. And she believes that, and she works to that end, and still, you know, pins cards with her arthritic hands all bent up and encourages other people. So that's really who she is. She's always been my encourager.
My goodness. If you have a pulse, you have a purpose. That's that needs to be like on a shirt of yours somewhere. That's amazing.
We've got shirts coming that say, be a Betty, you know, so.
Oh, I love it.
To really be everything that you can be. And no matter how old you are, there's still reason for you being here and for you to be fulfilled with purpose is what she's all about.
I love that. And I would have to echo that, you know, I attribute my success to my parents. You know, my parents are not in the music industry like your mom. My mom was a domestic engineer and she helped run my parents' business. My parents own a home inspection company. They're in real estate. And I grew up, I was homeschooled for a couple of years, and I grew up listening to my mom as I was doing my math in her office. Hi, I'll stay home and building inspections and like selling these clients. And I really carried that in my spirit. Like as I grew up, that drive, that work ethic, that grit that it takes to self-start every day and make something out of nothing, you know? And so I felt that as I saw your Instagram post, and you're such a good daughter to her. You know, you love her so well. And it's very similar, I feel, to the relationship, the closeness, the love and respect that I have for my parents as well. So getting into how you started, because, you know, like I said, everybody knows you've been in this for a long time and you started out as a singer-songwriter. I think you released your first album at 15. Yeah,
I did.
That's so cool. So tell
recorded me. Recorded and released and then played in bands and, you know, the whole nine yards and did the touring, the performing a good bit. And still do now when I want to. You know, I've got a performance coming up on the 28th, I think, of this month.
Oh, nice. Yeah. That's very cool. And so what, like, I know for me, like, when and why I transitioned from being a full-time entertainer, performer into coaching. But I'd love to hear your story on it. When was that switch?
You know, I tell people all the time, I never really planned on, you know, being Mama Jan, everybody's vocal coach. It's like that wasn't in my description of who I was going to be. It was always artist related. So for me, It was about pursuing my own artist career the entire time.
Yeah.
All along that, I'm helping other people in the studio. I mean, you know this.
Yeah.
You end up singing background vocals on other people's projects. You help other people write songs. You're in the studio. You're recording stuff. You're doing vocal work on commercials. You're doing cartoon noises. And ultimately what happens is you end up helping somebody else be better.
Yep.
And so from that and being willing to help somebody else do what they do best, I found that I could actually interpret, if you will, some classical vernacular that I had grown up learning. And by playing rock and roll music, it made a good merger to be able to help what I call street musicians, mm-hmm. rappers and rock and roll singers and R&B singers. And it just got to be the thing that I could help other people deliver better. And then when I learned more about vocal damage and all the other stuff, it made me the go-to person in the industry. And I was just the first girl on the block to do it. I'm older than you, so I just beat you to the punch. But the
not
bottom line
much.
Is, no, you know, I was just the first one in this area anyhow, and in the industry that got recognized as being kind of the rock vocal coach. And because of that and my ability to cater to rock and roll singers, R&B singers, rappers, even jazz singers, country singers, it was more contemporary in nature versus what was then only classical or pedagogical. And so being able to cater to contemporary singers, which is what I was, built a whole nother career for me that I wasn't even expecting. And I really love helping other people and mentoring. And it also allowed me to move out of my professional degree is in psychology. So I was working
cool.
as a psychologist for the state of Georgia.
Wow.
And so it helped me move out of that state, you know, job into being self-employed, and I could pursue my own music even more.
Yeah.
So that was really the perfect merger and what God provided for the, you know, for me to do.
That's such a God thing. And I love, mm-hmm. first of all, I love your humility in that story, because you say like, oh, I just happen to be the first person on the block, but nothing grows unless huge value is given. Right. And so you added a ton of value.
Good point.
To those artists and
thank you. Yeah, good point though.
And you're not the only person on the block now. There are plenty of coaches in Atlanta and you're still going strong.
Absolutely.
So that's a testament to you and your competence and your love for it. So
well, there are a lot there and it's not just in Atlanta. There are a lot of really good coaches, you know, throughout the nation that and I've made some good friends and know some other, you know, some really good folks that are out on the road and doing what they do. So it's kind of cool to see now.
That's right. Yeah, the road coaches. Woo, that's bless them. I can't do that. That's like
I still do that. I enjoy the tour work and the tour prep and being out there. It's grueling. It's grueling work. But then, you know, growing up touring and being, you know, on buses and in cars and suitcases and all that, it's just something I'm used to.
So let me ask you a question. And I'm really interested in this answer actually. So the changeover between like kind of budding psychologist and musician, singer, songwriter to mm-hmm. transitioning to coaching. When did you, or did you, was there a point where you were like, I actually like helping others more than I like singing for myself or helping myself in my own career? Was there a point?
I don't know that I can say that I mean, I still love singing. I still do. It's just creatively very different now because I'm not motivated to reach that brass ring myself. You know what I'm saying? It's really helping other people to shine is what I say I do best.
Yes.
I think that in our industry, and you know this, any woman knows this for sure, because our industry is very youth-driven and very youth-oriented.
Yes.
So if you're over 22 years of age as a woman, you're too old.
All right.
Well, I was already too old when I was, you know, starting out doing coaching, as far as the industry is concerned. But
right.
I was still, you know, making part of my living as a performing artist and still playing in clubs and doing what I did.
Sure.
So as the demand for my time really got to be greater, and it provided an economic means for me to not only do that, make a living, be in studios, do what I love, write songs, you know, working with other people, go on tours, be behind the scenes and still be involved in the process.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, well, this is pretty cool.
Yeah.
And just because I wasn't the person being recognized up front, I was still a part of that team. So it was really kind of a natural osmosis, I guess you would say.
Mm.
When I built the first studio, probably 18 to 20 years ago or so, it got serious because I was also responsible for other people making a living off of me.
Yes.
And
I feel
that really, it changed the levity, I guess, if you will, of what I was doing. It wasn't about me.
Mm-hmm.
It was really through me that God was doing something special. And it was really about lending myself to that process and then fostering and mentoring other people, which
mm-hmm.
I've continued to do throughout the legacy of my business. And I'm very, very humbled by that and also very proud of that.
Absolutely. And you've done a beautiful job. And I so resonate
Thank
with
you.
What you've said, because I remember my first hire and I remember getting my building and I was like, whew, okay, bills. Yeah. Definitely.
Yeah.
We got to get cracking here. Like this is real, you know, especially my goodness. I remember a very defining moment in my life as a businesswoman doing what we do when COVID hit.
Yeah.
I had two single moms at the time working for me, and I'm a single mother and mm-hmm. to a 7-year-old boy. And, I remember the first 2 weeks of COVID, I don't know if it happened to you, but especially our live students, they started dropping like flies and people were getting rid of their housekeepers, luxury things, you know, and of course we're in a want to, but not a have to service. Right. So
mm-hmm.
that started happening. And I was laying in bed one night and I thought to myself, okay, I have this much money in the bank and we usually bring in this amount. What am I going to do? Am I going to be that person who ends up like needing to lay off people, you know, cause I saw mm-hmm. it like all around me. It was happening within the first month of everything. It was just crazy of mm-hmm. families and friends saying, oh, I have to let this person. And I laid in bed and I was crying and I was like, Lord, this business was always yours. It was always yours, because your story is so similar to mine. It's so crazy. Like, I never thought I was going to coach, never intended to coach. In fact, I ran from it for years. Mm. But I said, this is always yours. And I'm going to pay them even if we have no students left, tell them to my last dollar. And until I have nothing left, they're going to get paid exactly what they're expecting to get paid. I'm until I'm down to zero and have nothing left to give. And it does add a sense of responsibility, like you said, when people are depending on you for their living and their children are depending on you through their parents for their living. And isn't it such a blessing to be able to be responsible for that and to shoulder that? There's a very special strength that you have to be able to shoulder that, as long as you've done with such grace and such beauty. I mean, I've not been at it as long, and so I know some, but I don't know as long as you have. And so I really respect that and I admire that in you.
Thank you. I have a better pandemic story than that.
Really?
My mother had a stroke 2 days before the pandemic shut us down.
Oh,
now,
my God.
I knew that my lease at my old studio where I'd been for 18 years, I knew that lease was coming up. I didn't know that we were going to have a pandemic. So
right.
we all knew we were going to have to move and build out somewhere else. But in the middle of all of that, we had to build a new studio. I had to relocate everybody.
Wow.
Everybody had to go online immediately doing virtual stuff. And I also had a mother that had to rehab from a stroke. We didn't know she was going to live.
Oh, my gosh.
So in the midst of the pandemic for the nation, we were having our own personal pandemic in my family. And then my business had its own pandemic because of having to move, literally. My staff and who are my friends literally were nailing boards and painting and hanging cloth. And my guys especially were there to pick up the slack and had my back the entire time, knowing full well that for the first really 60 days of the pandemic, I was sleeping on the floor rehabbing my mother, because over
Bless
my dead
heart.
Body, was I going to leave her in the hospital and let Absolutely. Them kill her?
Absolutely.
That wasn't going to happen.
Yep.
So,
good for you.
It was the most challenging thing I've known really, and I've made a lot of stupid mistakes in my life, so I've done a lot of crazy stuff, had a lot of challenges, but I've never really been challenged to the core that way, and to really be solely reliant on God's grace and provision was an amazing thing to not only be in the midst of, but have to rely on, and to know that I was going to be solid and that God was going to take care of every one of my staff. There's 10 people that depend on me to make money and to keep their households up. And they were all equally pandemicked.
Right.
So it was an amazing thing, Tara, to see it all come together. And I had the least amount of control that I've ever had in my entire life. And yet was totally covered. And we have not only flourished, but all of the business maintained. And we actually picked up extra business during the pandemic because more people were stuck at home.
Yes.
And didn't have anywhere to go or anywhere to spend. And so we got enough business and it maintained and kept everybody floating.
Yeah.
Somehow I had already, you know, saved enough money knowing that I was going to have to move.
Mm-hmm.
So there again, in advance of me even knowing a pandemic was coming, you know, God provided for me to have the finances that I needed to be able to build out. And now here we are a couple of years later and we're rocking. So
good. I love that.
I'm incredibly humbled by the process. I'm grateful. And also continue to be in awe of not only the resilience of people, my friends, the people who have my back, people that I would give a kidney to if I had to, but also the real desire to pursue and to survive.
That's
and
right.
And to make sure that we're solid no matter what and still provide good service. So
absolutely. I mean, and to that end, that year during the pandemic ended up at the end of the year being my highest grossing year. After going from thinking it down to my last dollar, I'll pay my people to, oh my gosh, we've never made so much money, you know, because like you said, people were home, bored, do something with my children, please, you know, online. Yeah. and
ours, we had artists, national artists that are used to touring, are used to being out there, are used to being in front of an audience.
Right.
And they were stuck.
Yes. Terrible.
And helping people not become depressed, helping them to funnel their creative energies in other ways.
Yeah.
Helping them to dig out of that because it was difficult.
Very.
It was difficult for me. I mean, I was meeting myself coming and going. I don't really even remember half of what I was doing then just because I was doing what I had to do to survive and take care of my mother.
Yes.
So it was incredibly trying for a lot of people and helping artists to maintain their sanity without being in front of audiences and without really having that outlet to perform was a different piece of that. And then tours got canceled. People lost money. There were lots of things that made people want to jump off buildings.
Yes, you're right.
So keeping artists grounded, keeping ourselves grounded, keeping my family intact, keeping, you know, everything moving and other people and their economics up. And we were all afraid. It was like, oh my God. And then oh my God is really where that all got related to for me.
Absolutely. That's so true, Jan. And, you know, you touched on something that's interesting, you know, without being able to perform and do what singers, artists do, there's this sense of depression. And when there's no, like the Bible says, when there's no vision, the people perish, right? And when we don't know what to do, we just like, we're in a tailspin, right? And part of what I find interesting about you is that you did go from a front-facing artist to this artist developer extraordinaire with all these different hats. And, you know, when I was in high school, I went to performing arts high school. I was on the Broadway track, you know, you're going to be a star, your name's going to be in lights. And that's exactly what I did. And when I got there, I yawned and decided it wasn't for me. But like, I didn't know that there were other careers if you're a singer or if you love music in the music industry. And recently I've been asked, like, hey, well, maybe you should do some videos on that. Like, you know, what else could people do? For instance, if there's a pandemic and you can't sing or you can't tour, like, even if you go back to that, or what if you're a high schooler who loves to sing but feels like, oh, you know, it's so saturated. I just don't know if I have the voice that's competitive enough or the drive that's big enough to compete with that. Like, but I still love music. I guess I have to be an accountant now. You don't, right? There are other things. And I would love to hear your take on that. Like, what would you suggest to someone that's saying things like that? Or and what's your experience like, and your knowledge of other careers in the music industry that aren't necessarily like, okay, I'm a lead singer now?
So it's pretty incredible because of the opportunities now. You know, you have to remember, when I was coming up, we didn't even have laptops. So it, you know, you couldn't be a producer at home in your bedroom or in the basement.
True.
It was about, you know, if you didn't have the money to own a recording studio, which was incredibly expensive back then, there weren't a lot of options. Now they have college certificates and programs where you can graduate with a degree in audio engineering or being a producer.
Yeah.
Or songwriting programs, Belmont, you know, you've got Berklee School of Music, and it's not just jazz anymore. It's about contemporary music. It's about all of the things, all the ancillary forms of income that are attached to our industry.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, you mentioned being an accountant. There are people who are business managers now for artists that are on the road. There are tour professionals. There are people that do artist development. There are folks that are making commercials and doing sync licensing and doing publishing.
Yes.
There's so many different ways that a person can literally make a living in the music industry without just being an artist or being a dancer or being a drummer or a guitar player.
Right.
It helps, you know, on the creative side as a producer now equally as much as I am doing, you know, artist development and tour prep and things like that and coaching. It helps that I'm a musician. It helps that I've had the background and the experience of playing in front of 10,000 people or being on a stage in an arena or being on buses and being on tour or having to do all the schlep work that goes along with that.
Yeah.
And it helps also to be a team player when I understand what it takes to do all of those things, because back then, as an artist, you were doing all of that.
Yep,
there was no such thing as a publicity team or a marketing team. You were the marketing team.
Right.
It was guerrilla marketing at that point. And you were responsible for building your own fan base. There was no such thing as social media. We didn't have podcasts. We didn't have computers. I'll say that again. We didn't have cell phones. And so we didn't have social media. There was no other way to get people to come to your shows but to stick flyers on telephone poles.
Grassroots, baby.
Or send out, you know, postcards, which we did. So
postcards? Are you serious?
Send out postcards or flyers. And so mailing stuff out the old school way was the only way to let people to get word out, you know, making phone calls.
Wow.
So all of that experience, kind of like growing up recording on 2-inch tapes and having five people's hands on the mixing board, it makes me a better professional now with what's happening and being able to understand the technology and the expanse of technology and where it has helped us.
Yeah.
But it also applies that I have the old school information that's still applicable to how the best product can be made.
Yeah.
And so for me, it's the best of both worlds.
Sure.
That I came through that.
Yeah.
And with what you're saying, with all of the hats now that people wear separately.
Yes.
I used to have to wear all of those hats myself.
Yeah.
And it just helps me to understand the functionality for the artist when I'm doing artist development so that they can also choose better team members.
Mm-hmm.
But help to perhaps guide some young artists who really are not front people for a band or who aren't going to be that artist to be able to be a great songwriter or to be able to do sync licensing music or be behind the board and learn how to do engineering, or maybe they want to sit behind the camera. Maybe they want to, you know, be a production assistant, or maybe they want to learn how to do lighting. All of those things are so incredibly important to the support of whoever people see up front, like you and me
right
now. There are other people behind the scenes who've helped me sit here today with you.
Right.
So it's not just about me.
Right.
It may be through me.
Yes,
it's not
exactly.
just about you. It may be through you.
Yes.
but there's a whole lot of other people, editors, there's so many, you know, makeup girls, lighting people, you know, your people that are doing production.
Yeah.
All of those jobs are equally important, and no tour, no major artist, no red carpet, no, none of that happens without a great team.
Absolutely. I'm so glad that you mentioned that. And as long as you're not someone who just simply has to be in front of the camera, and I think neither you nor I ever plan to be, it's just sort of part of the job description, right? It's a byproduct of what we do. But there are so many different facets, and you can still be so involved in music and in the industry without feeling like you have to make it. Like, you can pay your bills, you can have a really nice living, and still be in an exciting industry involved with this really creative process and not necessarily have to be the front. And by the way, I know you agree with this. Being the front-facing person is exhausting. It takes a lot, you know? And you said something interesting. I'd love your take on this. So you mentioned five hands on the mixing board, right? And and that's real. I mean, I know that's real, right?
Oh, yeah.
What do you think as far as five hands on the mixing board all the way now to AI and what's going on with how that may impact music production and music songwriting in general? Like, what are your thoughts on that?
I don't know that the jury's in on any of that yet.
No, it's still early.
I think that authenticity is something that people are starving for.
Yes.
In this day and time. So for me in my house, I mean, technology is really great. And I don't want to discount that, because we are all in need of various forms of technology to be able to live our lives the way that we know them now, right? I think that the same thing I believe about technology, I'll say about AI, which is technology.
Yep.
As much good as can come from it, there's equal bad that can come from it.
I agree.
I would hope and pray that our industry embraces the good and somehow diminishes the bad. I don't know that that's going to happen. And yeah. I don't think that mankind is really prepared yet for the impact of AI.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, I walk into that very cautiously, knowing that there are parts of the technology that can aid me in assisting other people. And if it improves the circumstances and allows me to do better work, I'm all about that.
Right, sure.
When it begins to replace functioning and authenticity and humanity, I don't want anything to do with it.
Yeah.
So for me, if that's where, you know, AI is taking us as the human race, I would rather kind of live on my farm and say, I'll see you guys later. Y'all go ahead and have a good time.
Raise your chickens.
Because I still believe in making the music.
Yeah.
There's something incredibly spiritual to me about that.
Yeah.
There's something that can't really be replaced. And I know that they can feed something into AI and it can write a song. I know that we can program things, we can do all the technology, but it takes away the real heart and soul of who we are as artists. And without true artistry, without art and the creation of it, a civilization dies.
I agree.
And that's happened before. So I'm hoping that we don't see that again. And if so, I don't really want to be a part of it, so I'll be ready to go ahead and get out.
So I completely resonate and agree with what you're saying, Mama Jan. Let me ask you another question, backing up from AI to the dawn of autotune, you know, and before pre-autotune, were you in that? And if so, what were your thoughts then? Did you kind of feel the same way about autotune?
Yeah, I wrote an article for Billboard that said, you know, is autotune the devil?
nice.
Because when autotune came on the scene, it was that first piece of technology that made things unreal, so to speak.
Exactly.
Well, you know, everything was being tuned, and so the public began to consume records that were perfected.
Exactly.
And we used technology to perfect, take out human error, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes great records. So I wasn't mad at it that way. I was mad at how it was being used. I use tuning, we tune everything that we produce.
Yeah.
We hand tune everything that we do so that it's not just automated all the way through.
Yeah.
It's about capturing the greatest performance. And because I edit the crap out of vocals. I mean, when I'm doing vocal production, I mean, I edit because I can and because I'm an artist and I really appreciate the process of capturing a great performance and then really putting that together, whether it's 7 or 10 takes or whatever I'm using.
Right.
But then using that as a training tool for the artist.
Yes.
So that they can be better, helping them to really learn how well, in fact, they can sing if they hone their skill set that way.
Yeah.
So it gives them a roadmap so that they can actually be better at what they're doing.
Yeah.
I think that's the best use of technology, is to make us better, not the other way around.
I agree.
And so I feel that way about auto-tuning. And I will say that when I was coming up and recording my albums, there was no such thing as auto-tune. And so you had to freaking sing.
And,
that's how I became the vocalist that I am.
Right.
So I encourage artists to really take the product that has been perfected and for them to perfect their live capabilities.
Yeah.
It makes them better live artists.
Right.
So that's the way that I see it, and that's the best possible way
to use it. That's actually the crux of what you said there, live artists. And I feel when I say you have to, I mean, like, in order to be radio ready industry standard, like, what song do we listen to on Spotify or on the, that's not tuned? I mean, I think we both would be hard pressed to find one. And frankly, if there were one, I feel like they'd be shouting it to the rooftops. Like, this is not auto-tune. This is, or this was a one take, you know, like people would be advertising that because it's so rare. It's just not done.
Well, when you look at like, some of the, what is it called? The small room, tiny room
tiny
recordings.
Tiny desk. Yeah.
Tiny desk. Like Usher, everybody was like, oh my God, he's so great. Yes, he's great. He's also, he's live.
Yeah.
So he knows how to sing live, but if you go to his shows and you hear him, he's singing live.
Right.
That's not piped in kind of stuff. And so there's a difference in artists who can actually deliver, who know how to throw down live, versus people who have backing tracks that are, you know, lip syncing 80% of their shows.
Oh, I hate
and
it.
And I smell that a mile away.
Me too.
So, I mean, I don't like that about technology, because it's made artists be lazy instead of helping them to be better.
And I would venture to say it's made people famous who shouldn't be artists. I mean, it's made.
Well, they're not.
Well, right.
They're not artists.
But we say that, right? But like, tell their fans that. And they're like, no, they're a great singer. They're not, you know, and I get it. I don't expect people with an untrained ear to hear the kind of nuancey things we hear when we're like, that's bed music right there. That's Sweetener tracks.
Well, they're great celebrities. I think social media has, basically what social media has done is it has celebrated celebrity.
Thank you.
But it hasn't really embraced necessarily real artist.
Yes.
There's still some of both.
Yes.
And I appreciate, I'm not saying that I think it's bad for people to make a living being celebrities.
Right.
Good for them.
Right, right.
But that's not to be confused with being a great artist.
Yes. And to me, if you sound great in a recording, I want to come to your live show, and I would be so happy to hear it just as good, if not better or different. I mean, that's what a live show is about, right? And it's just Usher is one of them, man, and you get those kind of diamonds in the rough with those live performances where you're like, that's just as good or better than the record. Oh, glory, hallelujah! You know, this is an artist,
and that's the way it should be. I believe that live, our shows were definitely, the records were great, and I'm proud of the work that I've done in recording.
Mm-hmm.
But our live shows, people left our live shows blown away. Because we were great musicians.
So good.
And we understood how to entertain.
Yeah.
And we didn't have lights and pyro and all the other stuff that we had to stand on a stage and entertain people with our personalities and engage them. And we had to be great players.
Yeah.
And so to me, if an artist can't do that, or if their show doesn't knock me out, I'm not really engaged. I don't really want to be supportive of that, because I believe in great art.
I love that so much. You know, some people, and you've even said it too in this podcast, like, you know, some people would say that's old school and you called yourself old school. I call that authentic. I call that still necessary, you know?
I think at some point everybody's, what people don't realize is that everybody's going to be old school. If you live long enough, the way that the world progresses.
Yeah.
Everybody's going to have old school.
That's right.
Everybody's going to say, well, I remember when I was in the first grade, you know,
back in the day.
That, I mean, I live with a 94-year-old woman several days a week and take care of my mother. She never thought she was going to be here this long.
Wow.
She lived through the Great Depression. She lived through Pearl Harbor. She lived in the Korean War. It's amazing what my mother has experienced in her lifetime.
Amazing.
And there's so much wisdom there and so many pearls for me to garner.
Yeah.
And yet I'm seeing some of the same things now when I've got young kids who come in and go, Mama Jen, who's this bald-headed guy on Billboard magazine that sold out Madison Square Garden? And I'm like, oh, you mean Billy Joel?
No.
Well, let me tell you about Billy Joel. Or they come in and go, Miss Jen, who is this old guy playing bass for Kanye on the Grammys? And I mean, it's like Paul McCartney
of
the Beatles. And so,
no.
But see, that's the reality though, that today doesn't often look to that. That's also going to be history.
Yeah.
It's going to be history. Everything that we do at some point is going to be history.
Mm-hmm.
So what are you doing to maximize the time that you have to enhance somebody else's experience? And what are you really doing to help them along their way, to give them wisdom, to help them be better so that when they become history, they've got something to look back on where they actually mentored or helped somebody else.
That's
legacy. And that's really all there is.
Yeah.
That's kind of all there is. And I will say this, hopefully until they throw dirt on me, because of God's redemption in my life, I'm around a lot of stars.
Mm-hmm.
But there's one name that has continued to be above all else and has stood the test of time. And it's not Usher, and it's not Pink, and it's not Justin Bieber, and it's not Michael Jackson. And those are great artists and people that I love, and some of them I have personal relationships
mm-hmm.
with.
Mm-hmm.
But their name in 50 to 100 years will no longer be relevant, nor will mine.
Right. Right.
So what matters is heart to heart.
Mm-hmm.
It's what I'm doing spiritually to pour into somebody else to help them maybe understand what I know.
Mama Jan, I love you so much.
Thank you.
You so beautifully segued into the last thing I want to ask you, which is as a fellow woman of faith and a Jesus follower, I've found it very, we'll say interesting as a nice word, navigating that in the music industry. I've been asked to do things that nobody should be asked to do multiple times. I've had to say no to so many opportunities, as I'm sure you've had experience with as well. And it's not even just that. It's not even just the propositioning, because that's sort of like almost passé. It happens so often at this point. But as a Christian woman who is, if by all rights and with all reason, someone that's an authority in the industry, you know, that's looked up to, whose word carries weight, and you're a Christian woman in this industry with a lot of evil in it, frankly, how do you pick and choose? How do you navigate? And you know, even with songs or people to work with, like I've had to turn people down who I'm like, I cannot coach that or get behind those lyrics. I'm so sorry, you know, but I won't, you know. How do you navigate through that?
So I don't pick and choose. I think I leave that to God's hand. Whoever comes in, whoever I see are people that I'm supposed to give something to.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm working with somebody, for example, who comes in and they've got a lot of profanity in their lyrics or derogatory, whatever, especially my young guys, right? They'll come in and have a song. It's like, and they'll kind of go like that. And I'm like, wait, you know, what was that? And they don't want to say that in front of me because they respect me.
Mm.
And so that's it's a learning opportunity for me to, it's an opportunity for me to say to them, well, okay, I appreciate that, but if you don't want to disrespect me, you're okay disrespecting every other woman on the planet, including your mother and your grandmother and your two-year-old daughter.
Nice.
So if I'm able to flip on a light, even just for a minute, that makes somebody go, okay, maybe can we change that? Have I been more valuable that way than just not being involved at all? So that's one way I look at it. I also use any opportunity that I can to share my faith, to share any piece of that that I can and make it relevant to their lifestyle and to help them understand more why I believe what I believe, not to dump a gospel on somebody or be a Bible thumper, but I do have Bibles in my office that I give away.
That's awesome.
And any opportunity that I have to impact somebody else's life in a positive way, sometimes it's just helping them get through a difficult time or understanding why their manager does this or learning how to say no, setting limits, understanding boundaries, using parable representations to teach by. So anything that I can do that's going to help is what I'm here to do. Having good boundaries, Tara, is something I had to learn in my own life. Because I lived a large portion of my life way outside of the confines of what God's will is for me.
Gotcha.
And so knowing that part of my own walk keeps me ever so mindful that any of us can fall from grace in a minute.
Yep.
And so being able to share that with my clients, too, so that they know I am exactly like them.
Yeah.
There is nothing greater about me other than he who lives in me.
That's right.
In my heart. And so being able to relate to them very much on the human level and for them to know my own mistakes, I think is the greatest testament to what God has done in my life.
That's so good. I love that, Mama Jen. Well, thank you so much for being on today and just for being a light in the world and in particular in the music industry. It's so beautiful to have this conversation with you. I respect you so much. I appreciate your time.
Thank you very much.
Starting a podcast too soon, aren't you?
We're talking about doing that. We've jokingly called the new studio Mama's Music House.
Cute.
And we've done a couple of, we've filmed a few things. We've had some interviews that we filmed there and a couple of other things we've done. And so we're going to invite some people into house.
Nice.
And maybe we'll have Tara come into house.
I would be happy to do that. Absolutely. And if you do start one, I'll put it in the description box of this video. So guys, if she does start one, check in the link below in the description box. You may end up be checking out Mama's Music House podcast coming to you soon. Thank you so much, Mama Jen.
Awesome.
God bless you and all that you do.
God bless you right back. Thank you so much.
You're so welcome.